It's a spectacular day in Columbus and here in Ohio and in many parts of the Great Plains. Spring means more than warmer weather and spring blooms. It's also tornado season. You might remember the tornadoes that devastated the town of Xenia, Ohio, about an hour's drive from where I'm sitting in Columbus in April 1974, part of a series of almost 150 storms that hit 13 states and killed more than 300 people. Tornado forecasting has come a long way since 1974, but there's still plenty we do not understand. Right now, more than 100 scientists in a caravan of 40 vehicles are on the Great Plains to try to learn more. The Vortex 2 project is chasing storms across Tornado Alley until June 13th. If you have direct experience with tornadoes, tell us your story. Or if you live in an area with a history of the storms, tell us how they affect you. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the discussion on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Josh Werman is part of the Vortex 2 research project. He's in Nebraska today looking for storms. And nice to have you with us. And what's the forecast like in Nebraska?
Well, it's actually a pretty nice day here, but we're watching some bubbling clouds to our west, and so we're positioned down here in Hemingford, Nebraska, which is a small town in western Nebraska.
And what do you hope to achieve?
Well, Vortex 2 is the largest, most ambitious tornado project ever. The National Science Foundation and NOAA have pulled about $12 million of funding to support over 100 scientists, 40 scientific vehicles, radars, deployable weather stations, cars, unmanned aerial vehicles, to basically surround tornadoes and tornadic storms and try to push back the mysteries of how they form. And the goal is to, if we can understand how they form better, then we can make better predictions and make better warnings so people have longer time to get to safety.
And more accurate warnings. I think right about now, probably something on the order of 70% of tornado warnings there turn out to be false alarms.
Yes, right now most tornado warnings don't result in tornadoes. Some of that's by design because we'd rather overwarn than miss the big one. But we would certainly like to get that rate down and, even more importantly, increase that lead time. The average warning is 13 minutes. That means that half of those warnings are less than 13 minutes. And while that's much better than it was 10 or 20 years ago, we really shouldn't be satisfied with that. We want to give people half an hour, 45 minutes warning. So if they're in a weak structure, maybe they can go to a community shelter and really seek shelter if there's a violent tornado coming like that. A tornado you spoke of.
And you described a number of the vehicles in that expedition that you're part of. One of the ones that is also there seems to be something along the lines of a tank.
There is a tank out. He's not formally part of Vortex 2, but I have been working with him in order to collect data inside the tornadoes. And that's the tornado intercept vehicle. And what we try to do is have one of our Doppler arm wheels scanning over him, maybe at 50 or 100 feet in the tornado, and have him go through the tornado measuring at about 10 feet altitude, where it's just too slow for the radar to see. The whole goal of this type of experiment is to collect data on the tornadoes in as many different ways as we can, not just the wind fields, but also the temperatures and the relative humidity, not just at the surface, but also aloft, and get a three-dimensional, multi-parameter picture like we've never had before.
And I wonder, have you been able on the expedition thus far to find any tornadoes?
So far, Vortex 2 has been in a tornado drought. We're only 10 days into our experiment, and we've chased down some storms that were making hail and heavy rain, but so far no tornadoes. It's been very quiet, particularly the last several days out in the high plains.
And you're probably the only person out there rooting for bad weather.
Well, we don't really root for the bad weather. We don't really have any control over it, of course. But what we hope is that if bad weather occurs, if a tornado occurs, that we'll at least be there to learn from it so that when future tornadoes occur, we can help the forecasters give better warnings.
The technology involved in all of this, as Doppler radar in particular has improved, and as you can look at particular sections of the storm at different altitudes and different depths within the twisters, how has that informed our picture of the structure of these incredibly violent, sometimes incredibly violent storms?
Well, the technology's changed a lot. We have a fleet of these mobile radars, and I started up the Doppler on Wheels program 15 years ago, but now with Vortex 2 we have 10 of these Doppler radars, and we can map the three-dimensional wind field in the tornado. But it's very complex. We have 50 Lenovo computers basically downloading data from the radar, processing the data, and synthesizing the radar data with the surface mesonet stations in order to make this better-than-ever-before picture of what's inside.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest is Josh Werman, president of the Center for Severe Weather Research in Boulder, Colorado, calling us today from Nebraska, where he's part of the Vortex 2 project, hoping to see some tornadoes and gather data on these storms. 800-989-8255. If you've had direct experience with a tornado, email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Jordan. And Jordan with us from Edmond, Oklahoma, in the heart of Tornado Alley.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I just let you know I love your show. I listen to it every day.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. My comment was basically on the relaxed viewpoint of tornadoes. I live right in the middle of where the May 3rd tornado ran through back in 99. And, they blew the sirens the other night. In fact, this past Monday night, last Monday, I'm sorry. And, not a lot of people responded. And there was definite rotation in the area. And, if there was more cause for concern for other, for the tornadoes themselves, I think that it could really, help save lives and, have, lesser issues with, deaths and issues like that.
Josh Werman, is complacency one of the things you have to constantly struggle against?
Well, if we could make the tornado warnings better with more lead time and with a lower false alarm rate, then we think that complacency would go down because people would know that when a warning's made that there's really a tornado coming their way. I was down there for that tornado that went through Oklahoma City back in 1999, and one of my radars measured a wind of 301 miles per hour, and it was devastating. It just wiped houses down to their foundations, and even the normal type of shelter that people would have sought, maybe inside a bathroom, would not have been enough in the core of that tornado. So we're really trying to get warnings with enough lead time that people have time, if they need to seek even better shelters than that.
Jordan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Lori, and Lori's with us from Silverton in Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure, go ahead.
I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I guess right along with my earliest memories of the hot summers are those springs and the sounds of the warnings on the television and, the being taught to look for the wall cloud, the straight line on the horizon, which is hard for people to think of here because you don't see the sky that far down. But in Nebraska, it's flat, so you see the sky all around you. And you'd see those black wall clouds, and then as a kid, Mother always taught us, you see that cloud, you go in, you go to the basement. And we would have bags of water and bags of food and pillows and stuff in the center room in our basement. But we, in our neighborhood, never had tornado devastation. It seemed like the tornadoes always hit the same places. Over and over and over again, the same neighborhoods, the same places, and didn't hit the ones, the ones that it didn't hit. But I wanted to share a kind of a funny memory because truly growing up there, you saw the devastation that it did, the actual, leaf being stuck in a telephone pole. You could see that horrible devastation, but if it didn't hit you, you kind of just brushed it off. And in school, in junior high, when we would get a tornado alert, a warning, everybody had to go out of their classrooms, sit on the floor in the main hall, and put your head between your knees and put your books over your head. And one time we were sitting there, and it seemed like it was interminable. We're always having to go out in the hallway and sit there and put our books on our head. And the class clown went running down the hallways, hollering, "Toto, Toto, Toto." And for us, that was just a kind of a grand holiday. But it was terrible for people who lost everything.
Josh Werman, is she right? Do tornadoes tend to follow the same paths and hit the same targets again and again?
Well, there's no evidence that any areas are either more likely to be hit or that are really sheltered or safe. Just like with anything that's random, like flipping a coin, you can always get strings of unusual occurrences. But we've really never seen, when we look over 100 or 200 years of tornado history, we don't see any areas that are protected like that. What she describes is certainly true. People behave, you know, strangely. People are very frightened when there are tornado warnings. Afterwards, people are really shell-shocked by the tornadoes. And I've gone through a lot of areas doing damage surveys in tornado-devastated towns. And it's, you know, it's very moving, and it's, you know, a very emotional moment for us because we're trying to learn from these storms in a scientific way. But they really have a very real and terrible human impact sometimes.
And I know that obviously there's a long history of tornadoes. They can strike anywhere. Obviously, they strike most often in the places, well, like where you are in Nebraska. And, of course, that's where Laurie grew up as well. But topography, is that related to the progress of storms, or is that related to your ability to track storms?
Well, probably both. I mean, in mountainous areas, it's almost impossible, or hilly areas, it's very, almost impossible to try to track the storms in the way that Vortex 2 is doing. And also just areas that are wooded are very hard. The radars can't see through them. Out in the high plains here, like Nebraska, there's a very good road network. It's just logistically very good for us. But we also need the conditions for violent thunderstorms to form. And those conditions are dictated by geography. And the high plains, where you have a source of warm, soupy air from the Gulf of Mexico, combined with, in the springtime, a jet stream still coming overhead, means that really in the core tornado alley from Texas up through Nebraska is where we see the most tornadoes, the most violent tornadoes. But, of course, violent tornadoes can occur out of the center of Tornado Alley, and the violent tornadoes have occurred in Ohio and Pennsylvania, Indiana, a lot of areas in the upper Midwest also.
And Massachusetts, too. Laurie, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking with Josh Werman of the Center for Severe Weather Research about the Vortex 2 project. They're chasing storms in the Midwest. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Brian on the line. And Brian is calling us from Lewis in Delaware.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
In fact, good. I was up in Newcastle, Delaware at the time. I was living there about 4.5 years ago, about maybe 4.5, 5. And tornado touched down actually at the airport, damaged some C-5 transports that were there. And then it reformed in the parking lot of the warehouse of the company I was working for. Went by my window. It had flipped at least 25,000-foot street truck beneath my window, threw a dock plate across the parking lot. Then it moved a semi fully loaded across. It couldn't flip it, but it slid it. And then just made a left, and it destroyed a self-storage unit that was a Crescent Industrial Park. And it, you know, sort of, you could see afterwards how random it was and the just sort of haphazard turns that it made through the...
And I wonder, as you think about those haphazard turns, Josh Werman, that makes it very difficult to track these storms, which is exactly what you're trying to do.
Well, we're trying to forecast those paths, those turns. We're trying to forecast when they get weaker and stronger. Some of those things are very difficult to predict. Out here in Vortex 2, we have this super sophisticated equipment, these mobile Doppler radars that can cut through that tornado every 5 or 10 seconds and see exactly where it is and how it's turning. And that's how we position all our vehicles in just the right place to get them in front of the tornado. Or some of the vehicles, of course, don't want to be in the tornado. They want to be just outside. Because we're trying to be very ambitious, targeting close to, but not dangerously close to, these tornadic storms.
Here's an email from Wilhelm. Seconds before a tornado hit Kalamazoo, Michigan, killing 5 people in the downtown district, I raced to the basement. The carnage was staggering. Also, I exited the Kansas Turnpike and took refuge in a buried cement vault and listened to the hail hammer the metal door while fighting claustrophobia and the urge to climb the ladder, open the door, and race out into the storm. And maybe he was battling claustrophobia, but he's not the only person to find these both terrifying and very attractive, something you want to go see. Is that a problem?
Well, there are a lot of people who storm chase, and they want to go see the storms, and they collect video, and they just watch them. And I don't think that's a problem. I think that's great. I go out to see the mountains in my hometown of Boulder, Colorado. Doesn't mean I'm a geologist. I'm just out there appreciating nature. And tornadoes, even though they can cause great devastation, are also some of the most striking and many times beautiful atmospheric phenomena.
Let's get Todd on the line, and Todd's calling us from Detroit.
Yeah, hi. My question is, how is the research that you're trying to do differ from any research that's been done in the past? I'm assuming that tornado chasing has been, you guys have been doing this for about 20 years or so, I'm just guessing. How is your research going to be different from anything else that's been done before?
Well, there's a lot of tornado chasing that goes on. Probably hundreds or thousands of people do that, and they're not really collecting research data. It's primarily video or some measurements, mainly for their own interest. What Vortex 2 is doing is surrounding these storms, collecting very focused data. We're mapping out the three-dimensional wind fields. Underneath those maps of the winds, we're measuring the temperature and relative humidity. What kind of precipitation is falling? Is it rain? Is it hail? We're trying to understand the specifics of why one thunderstorm makes a tornado, but another one doesn't. Why one thunderstorm makes a weak tornado, and another one makes a violent, long-track, really deadly tornado. The differences are really subtle, and we have to target these with this unprecedented fleet of sophisticated instrumentation, all these mobile radars, these deployable weather stations, these vehicles that carry weather stations on top. And then it's a very complicated process. We have basically 50 or so scientists after the fact, scientists, graduate students, postdoctoral researchers, who are going to be trying to synthesize the temperature fields with the wind fields and really trying to get those nuggets out of that data that show us why that storm made a big tornado and why, you know, why did it do it at exactly that moment and why did it go that direction? Why did it die when it did? A lot of questions that we really have a very hard time answering now without all that data.
Todd, thanks very much for the call. Josh Werman, good luck to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Josh Werman of the Vortex 2 Steering Committee, where he's a member out in Nebraska, hoping to find a storm to look inside. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Columbus, Ohio.